Not here, but somewhere else. He shifted to Calypso, to the palace, but it was remarkably empty. A lone guardsman spotted him and called out, but he was already gone, moving to the next likely place for a battle. The east. Feria. Gryon Ironclad had been stirring all kinds of pots as of late. He reappeared well away from Feria, just to be safe. The Iron City looked peaceful in the early morning air. There were no shouts, no cries of battle, no smell of blood in the air. Then again, there was something. He turned to face the sea. There! He spotted them closing in. From this distance they were small enough to be birds. Below them were ships, dozens of ships, each bearing the Calypsian dragon, warmongers and destroyers of peace. Where there was battle, there would be fate marked. With any luck, I'll find the one I'm looking for, Bane thought. 98. The Southern Empire, Fanes. Falcon Hoser. Falcon's brothers had heard rumors of the previous night's disturbance in the slave quarters, and they wouldn't let it go, prattling on about how weak he was, and how our father would never have allowed such a mockery to be made of the Hoser name. Falcon tuned them out, his mind still clicking through the events that led to his decision to concoct the story. Shanti's words replayed over and over again in his head. We would have been killed, unless... unless he did something, which he did. But he hadn't saved them, not really. If not for his rash actions, they never would have been in that position in the first place. Still, she'd made her point in dramatic fashion. He was emperor, and he did have power. But could he really do anything for the slave's plight? He shook his head. He could, but he knew the Phoenicians would never allow it. They were too accustomed to the slaves, too happy to be served, to have the worst jobs done for them while they ate and drank and carried on their slothful lifestyle. There would still be a rebellion, only it would be his own people rising up against him.
Are you even listening, brother?
Fang shouted, finally breaking through the fog.
Yes, yes, it was a foolish decision, I heard you, Falcon said, hoping they would go away.
That's not what he said, Fox said,
rounding the other side of the throne. He was holding something. A book. The book Shanti had given him. The last page was ripped out and clenched against the front cover. Falcon frowned. His brothers were being insolent even for them.
You ransacked my quarters,
Fang said.
I was looking for an emperor, but there's none to be found in all of Fanes.
You have crossed a line.
No, brother. We are on the same side of the line. It is you who has crossed over, and this is the final piece of proof. Father would be ashamed of you.
Anger boiled up inside Falcon.
Father was a tyrant.
He instantly regretted the words, not because they weren't true, but because of the risks associated with speaking them. Thankfully, no one but his brothers were around to hear.
Father made Fanes great again. You are disassembling it stone by stone.
Falcon could sense something else lingering on the tip of his brother's tongue.
Say your piece, brother. I am all ears.
Fang hesitated for the briefest of moments, and then said,
I challenge you. On what grounds?
Falcon growled. Inside, his heart was beating too fast.
This is it. It came sooner than I expected. Right to rule. You are the eldest, but not the strongest, Fang said. I've defeated you both numerous times in combat,
Falcon pointed out, using the same argument he'd relied on time and time again.
Please back down.
Inside, however, he knew they wouldn't. Not now that the challenge had been issued.
Not at the same time,
Fox said, grinning.
Songs will be sung of this fight.
You're both challenging me.
It wasn't unprecedented, but he didn't expect it in this case. The challenges were always to the death. Only one emperor could emerge from the circle. He'd thought Fox would back down and let Fang rule. Fang said,
Either of us would be better than you, and two of us improves our odds.
But at least one of you will die too.
True,
Fang said. "But we're willing to risk it for the good of Fanes."
"For the good of Fanes,"
Falcon thought wryly. Strangely, he felt no fear, only resignation. This day was inevitable from the moment his younger brothers had been born with malice in their hearts.
"May the strongest emperor survive,"
Falcon said, leaving them in his wake. Shanti came to his quarters on her own terms, just after the evening meal. News of the challenge had swiftly spread throughout the palace, and then through all of Fenir, if not the entire empire. With the stream network, the Four Kingdoms would know soon, too. A palace officiant had informed Falcon several hours earlier that the challenge would take place the following day, on neutral ground. Shanti said,
"I heard,"
and closed the door.
"You're not happy? I thought you would be."
"You're the best thing that's happened to Fanes in a long time," she said. Her compliment, though undeserved, sent a thrill through him.
"Says a rebel slave."
"Yes, I do. And I do not make such statements lightly."
"Is that why you kicked me in the face?"
She cringed.
"Sorry, but I needed to be certain."
"Of what?"
"Of you."
He mulled over her words, remembering the man who'd come to help her, who'd tried to kill him.
"Who was—"
"You didn't recognize him,"
she interrupted.
"That was Jai Jaru."
"What? But he had—"
"Red skin, narrow eyes, a slight limp." Falcon shook his head at his own prejudice. He'd sized up the man as a faceless slave, using three very vague details, even though he'd known there was something familiar about him.
"A disguise," he said.
"In fairness, it is an effective one. I had to look twice to make certain my eyes didn't deceive me."
"You know him from the Garadia escape,"
Falcon said. A statement, not a question. She nodded anyway.
"Yes. We are close."
"Lovers,"
Falcon said, forcing a thin smile. He wondered how the former Garadia mine master had managed to infiltrate the palace. Then he realized he didn't really care.
"None of your business," she said,
but it wasn't a reprimand. There was a brief moment of silence as she stood inside the door.
"I'm sorry I pushed you so hard. I was hoping you would be able to make a difference without bloodshed."
"It's fine,"
Falcon said, and he was surprised how much he meant it. The last fortnight had been more interesting than the last 18 years of his life.
"But there is always bloodshed. That's something I learned as a boy."
"What will happen?"
she asked.
"My brothers and I will fight to the death. Two will die, one will emerge the Emperor."
"When?"
"Tomorrow."
"So soon?"
"We can't leave the Empire perched on the edge of a knife. There are kingdoms to conquer, wars to be won."
The only solace Falcon took from any of it was that the spectacle would not be public.
"Perhaps I can do something."
"You might not want to,"
Falcon said, taking a deep breath. He felt as if a giant weight was crushing him into the floor.
"Why not?"
"Because I have something to tell you. A truth, long kept from you."
Her eyes narrowed.
"What truth?"
"It's about your mother," he said.
There was a slight tremble of her lip as he began to tell the story of how her mother had died. When he finished, Shanti said nothing, but he could sense the grinding of her teeth behind her pursed lips. She had to be saddened by the news, but only anger showed in her posture, her expression. After a moment in which her fierce green eyes seemed to bore through him, impaling him on a spike, she turned, opened the door and left, slamming it behind her. And Falcon knew, whatever she'd been considering doing to help him on the morrow, had been lost the moment he told her the truth. Despite that, he felt relieved, exhausted but weightless, as if his feet were lifting from the floor.
99. The Southern Empire, Fanes. Jai Jaru.
Jai had gone to sleep as soon as his evening work was finished, but found himself being shaken awake.
"Jai,"
Shanti hissed.
He replied. "If you want to kill the Emperor, I will allow it.
She spoke the words directly in his ear, so that any of the other slaves who were pretending to sleep couldn't hear. He jolted up, fully awake in an instant. She put a finger to his lips, motioning for him to follow. They snuck from the quarters and into the corridor. The guards patrolled this area regularly, so they wouldn't have long.
"What happened?"
Jai asked.
"Nothing," she said,
but her eyes were a moving target.
"Tell me,"
he said, placing a steadying hand on her shoulder. Like a brittle stalk blown over by the wind, she fell into his arms. Her body shook silently, her tears wet against his neck.
"She's dead,"
she sobbed.
"My mother is dead."
For a moment he was stunned, thinking of his own mother, how beautiful she had looked as she danced Fen Sir, just as he remembered her. Then he remembered the story of how Shanti's father and sister had been murdered, how only she and her mother had survived. If her mother was dead, it was only her left. He felt his own eyes welling with tears, his heart cracking to see her in such pain.
"I wish I could have met her,"
he said, immediately wondering whether it was the right thing to say. He shook his head. "Not just her, all of them." She looked up at him, her eyes moist with tears, mixing with the black ones etched on her cheeks. Though her pain flowed over her like a waterfall, she was as beautiful as he'd ever seen her.
"Me too,"
she said, raising a hand and wiping one of his tears away with the back of her thumb. He hadn't even felt it drip from his eye. Jai's expression turned serious.
"How?"
She shook her head, and the sadness seemed to disappear, replaced by anger.
"The wound is too fresh. Perhaps one day I will be able to speak of it."
Jai remembered what she'd said before about killing the Emperor. "I am yours to command," he said.
"I..."
She hesitated, biting her lip.
"You heard about the challenge from Fang and Fox?"
"It's all anyone is talking about," Jai said. "Tomorrow the world will be two hoses better.
The frustrating thing is, Falcon was honest about my mother. He could have told any lie, or said nothing at all, but he chose to tell me, so that I wouldn't protect him any more."
Jai's eyes narrowed. "I've known the hoses for a long time, Shanti. It's a trick. It's what they do. Falcon is the same as the others. He's not what he appears to be." She blew out a breath.
"You saw what he did last night? How he saved us? I gave him the ultimate test and he passed."
Jai had thought of nothing else since it happened. It was strange and unexpected. Jai had originally believed it was because Falcon seemed to have feelings for Shanti, but that didn't make sense. If that's all it was, he could have had Jai executed for trying to kill him.
"There's more," Shanti said.
Jai raised his eyebrows, waiting.
"I told him who you are."
"You did what?"
"He barely batted an eye. He almost seemed to have expected it."
"Then why am I still here? He should have had his guards take me back to Goradia, or worse." Falcon Hoser showing some kindness toward a pretty slave girl was one thing, but sparing Jai was something else entirely. Shanti said,
"I know you don't trust him, and neither do I, not fully, but there's more to him than you think. He's a brilliant actor, playing the role he was born to play, but behind closed doors he's kind and insecure, and always seeking an escape from his real life."
Behind closed doors. Jai tried to control the flush of jealousy, but found it impossible.
"Jai,"
Shanti said, reading his expression,
"we have only talked, I swear by the light of the Sun Goddess."
She touched his cheek, grazing her lips against his. It sent shockwaves through his very soul.
"My heart is broken, else I would give myself to you this very moment."
Jai swelled with happiness and desire, tempered only by his remembrance of the pain she was in. He held her against him, their heartbeats falling into step until they felt like the rhythm of a single heart. And though Jai had only seen the dark side of the Emperor, he trusted Shanti's instincts implicitly. They'd been through too much together for him to do anything different. A plan began to form in his head. If Falcon is winning against his brothers,
"We shall let him win," he said. "But if he is losing, we will crush his brothers as soon as they defeat him." It was the best compromise he could offer.
"Thank you,"
Shanti said against his neck. "I want to show you something," Jai said.
100. The Southern Empire feigns. Falcon Hosa. Falcon had a feeling the neutral location for the challenge had been planned by his brothers, and perhaps his own generals too. It was clear from their expressions that they were tired of being blocked by the Emperor and would be happy for a change of rule. Yes, they'd each wished him support from the gods, but their hearts weren't in it. The fight, of course, would take place in the large canyon where the slave army had been hidden away for years, living and training for the day when they would finally be set loose on Fane's enemies. The slaves had formed a giant circle around the ring, and were charged with pushing any of the competitors back into the fray if they attempted to flee. Only victory would allow them to step without. Falcon remembered a story his father had loved to tell, about how one of his brothers had once challenged him. Needless to say, Vin Hosa had come out on top, and was never challenged again. Falcon had seen Shanti and the crippled slave, he now knew to be the infamous Jai Jaru, boarding the large slave chariot. They would be in attendance, serving the many important men and women who had been invited to the private battle. Falcon had tried to catch either of their eyes, but they'd both ignored him completely.
"It is better this way," he thought. "It shall be easier to die, knowing I have no one on my side."
And die he would, he knew. Though he was a master of Fenru, his brothers were too. One on one, he'd defeat either of them 8 times out of 10, but facing them together, his chances were slim. The odds makers were giving him 1 in 60, which he thought was generous in his favor.
"Perhaps I should have bet on myself," he thought wryly.
"It's not like I'll need my wealth where I'm going. And it would mean less wealth for one of his brothers to inherit." Beyond the army of slaves, the canyon walls stood like massive sentinels, or perhaps witnesses, their heads heavy and downcast. The sun had not yet breached their guard, and the ring was shrouded in shadows. Fang approached him. He raised the fist that was meant for brothers, one of the 3 great pillars of Fane's. Falcon just stared at it, for fists would be the least of his worries today. All 3 of them were strapped with blades on their wrists and feet, in the traditional Phoenician manner. Fang only laughed, mimicking the gesture to Fox, who returned it. Fox said,
"May the god save it," Falcon said. "This is the work of men, not gods."
Fox said,
"It didn't have to be this way, brother. I am no longer your brother. May you die quickly and with great pain."
Falcon was surprised at his own words, at the intensity of the heat rising within him. It was born of a realization of how foolish he'd been his entire life, how much time he'd wasted on pretending to be someone he wasn't. His brothers had always fit the mold, while he didn't seem to be meant for a mold at all. Fox forced out a laugh, but he could see the fear in his youngest brother's eyes. Almost certainly it was Fang who'd bullied him into this. As children, he was always the one coming up with schemes. And Fox always went along with them, trying to impress his older brothers.
"I'm as much to blame as anyone," Falcon thought.
Instead of being a good example to Fox, he'd become his father in miniature, at least when anyone was watching. Now, abruptly, the intense anger he felt just a moment ago evaporated completely, leaving him melancholy. And he realized, despite everything, he didn't want to kill them. Not even Fang, who'd forced them both into this situation. Even if it meant Fane's was doomed to repeat the same cycle again and again, he would fight, but not to the death. As the officiant raised his arm to signal the beginning of the bout, Falcon began unstrapping his weapons.
Jai Jaru.
"What the void is he doing?" Jai said, watching as each blade dropped to the ground. The officiant seemed to be in shock too, his arm still raised. He seemed uncertain as to whether to start the fight, what with the Emperor having discarded his weapons like rusty butter knives. Shanti said,
"I told you he's different."
She didn't look pleased, only thoughtful.
She had told him, and Jai had believed her, but this wasn't just different. It was suicide.
"Begin!" Fang shouted at the officiant. "If my brother chooses to make this more challenging, so be it. We all make our choices."
Fox looked less convinced, eyeing his own blades, as if considering whether he should follow his eldest brother's lead. In the end, he tightened them instead. Jai felt his justice mark give a faint pulse, the first since he'd arrived. He had a role to play on this day, and it was fast approaching. The officiant, sweating profusely in the canyon heat, closed his eyes and dropped his hand. Fang didn't waste any time, springing off his hands and launching himself through the air, his body twisting all the way around twice, his bladed feet slashing the air to ribbons. Falcon sprang forward, performing a perfect somersault beneath the flipping Fang, catapulting out of it into a kick that caught Fox in the throat before he could defend himself. Gagging, the youngest brother stumbled back, clutching his neck with one hand while sweeping a rounded kick before him to keep Falcon at bay. By then, Fang had landed, turned, and cartwheeled back toward his brothers. He lashed out with both wrist blades in short succession, a series of deft swipes that would have given most martial artists more than they could handle. But Falcon truly was a master of Fenru, dodging each blow by ducking, sliding, and once blocking his brother's wrist with his own hand while avoiding being sliced open. He twisted Fang's arm back, and the middle brother cried out in pain. Fang followed it up with a powerful knee to his abdomen. Unfortunately, Fox had regained his breath and was charging in from behind. At the last moment, the Emperor seemed to sense it, dropping flat to the ground and kicking both legs upward to propel his brother into the air. Fox, however, managed to control his body in mid-air, landing on his feet. He kicked toward Falcon's head, but he rolled over, once more regaining his feet. There was a lull in the action as each caught their breath, circling like vultures. Something about Fang's and Fox's nearness made it obvious they were in league, at least until their older brother was dead. Jai scanned the sea of slaves, watching their faces for any signs of emotion, any evidence that they cared what happened in the ring. Instead, all he saw were blank faces, devoid of expression. His heart broke for them, for they had never been given the chance to live. His justice mark began to heat up. He caught Shanti's eyes and nodded at her once. The night before, he'd told her about his mark, about how it told him when someone was lying, how it gave him insights into the justices and injustices of the world around him, helping him see the truth where lines began to blur. She'd taken the news well, all things considered. He also told her about what else he thought it might help him do, a power he was only beginning to understand, the power of persuasion. He refocused on the match, where Fang and Fox were simultaneously flanking the Emperor, each trying to distract him while the other attempted to infiltrate his defenses. Jai, with his training in the defense art of Fen Lu, could see a dozen opportunities for them to breach Falcon's defenses, but they could only seem to focus on his fists and feet. Still, bit by bit, strike by strike, they wore him down, until he was breathing heavily as he retreated across the circle.
"Tighten the net,"
the officiant commanded, after a set amount of time had passed with no one dead or wounded. Without question, the slave soldiers began to march forward until the large ring was cut in half. Falcon was forced to sprint full speed around its edge to avoid being trapped by his brothers.
"He can't win this," Shanti said, "especially without weapons."
As if in response to the truth of her words, Fang performed a front flip, unfastening one of his blades from his wrist in mid-air and throwing it as he landed. Having not expected the unorthodox maneuver, Falcon was only able to save himself by twisting his body at the last moment, grunting as the blade entered his shoulder. Fang grinned.
"We haven't fought in a while, brother. I've learned a few new things."
Jai watched Fox closely during the exchange, could see the way his face twitched as he realized that once Falcon was dead, he would be next. Shanti leaned forward, as if considering joining the battle, the first ever slave woman to protect an emperor.
"No,"
Jai said. She looked at him, biting her lip.
"Do you trust me? Do you believe what I told you last night?"
"Yes," she said.
"I believe you believe what you said. But what if this doesn't work?"
"Then gods help us all," Jai said.
Back in the ring, Falcon had wrenched the blade from his shoulder, blood pouring down his arm. Like before, he tossed the weapon aside. Fang said,
"You're making this far too easy, brother."
"I shall try harder,"
Falcon said between clenched teeth, clutching his shoulder and trying to stem the flow of blood. The officiant called,
"Tighten the net!"
Once more the slaves marched in formation, cutting the size of the fighting area to a quarter of what it had been to begin with. Fang lashed out and Falcon dodged. Fang started a kick, but at the last moment twisted it to the side at Fox, catching him in the midsection, the blade sinking into his flesh. He hadn't expected it at all, a final betrayal by a brother he'd seemed to look up to. A stunned look in his eyes, he dropped to his knees, blood spilling between his fingers.
"Falcon,"
he said, his words slurring, his eyes finding the Emperor.
"Yes, my brother,"
Falcon said, sadness in his eyes.
"I am here. Go meet the gods."
Fox Hoser collapsed as life left him. Jaya's mark sang. An enemy to justice had perished. Falcon Hoser. Though Fox had become a miniature version of Fang, he still didn't want him to die. Seeing his lifeless body lying in the dust made his chest squeeze his heart.
"What a waste," he thought. "Why do we waste lives like so much rotten fruit?"
It was a question he knew there was no answer to. Determination poured through him, lending his body a jolt of strength.
"I will not kill Fang."
With their brother dead on the ground, the battle continued, Fang charging at him, slashing his remaining wrist blade from side to side, intermittently launching a front kick to keep him guessing. Falcon did his best to dodge the blows, but his body felt weakened by loss of blood, perhaps. He performed a side flip to escape a killing slash, but wasn't able to complete the rotation, landing awkwardly on his ankle. A moment later, pain roared through his shoulder and he felt a strange sensation pouring through his arm, chasing the agony away. A dull numbness set in. No, it was more than that. Paralysis.
"I can't move my arm," he thought. "Wait."
The feeling was spreading through his chest, into his other arm, his legs. His entire body felt like it was made of rhubarb jam. He tried to stand, but his legs gave way and he collapsed. His mind felt clouded over, a thunderstorm brewing. Everything was spinning, his brother's face appearing overhead, circling him, a grim smile of victory. A ray of light burst through the fog, a realization.
"The knife my brother threw. It was poisoned."
Jade hemlock had been known to cause paralysis over a period of time, an effect that occurred faster during periods of strenuous activity. It wouldn't kill him, but Fang didn't need it to. Disabling him would allow Fang to finish Falcon off with ease.
"I am sorry I failed you, Shanti,"
Falcon thought.
"I am sorry I wasn't the man you thought me to be. I am sorry about your mother, your father, your sister, your life. I wish..."
A blade flashed overhead, sparking as a light crested the cliffs, catching its edge. Fang being overly dramatic as he finished off his wounded prey. Falcon closed his eyes. Jai Jiru. From the moment Fox Hoser had taken his last breath, Jai's justice mark had been growing hotter and hotter on his heel, until smoke had begun to curl from his slave moccasins, a hole having burnt through the thin sole.
"It is time,"
Jai thought. He could feel the raw power filling him, making his heart pound. Not strength, not magic of the conventional kind, but magic nonetheless, not altogether different than that the slave master Vin Hoser had wielded. The thought made Jai uncomfortable, but with the Emperor lying prostrate on the ground, he had little time to contemplate the choice he was about to make.
"You don't have to save him,"
Shanti said, her voice angry, tears brimming her eyelids. Though her words were filled with vengeance, Jai could see the truth behind the mask. She didn't want Falcon Hoser to die. Still believed he was more than the world thought him to be. Jai didn't want to kill him either, not from the time he'd unstrapped his weapons and refused to kill his brothers. Fang sauntered over to the fallen Emperor, the confidence of certain victory spreading across his face. He raised his blade with a flourish, knowing all eyes were on him, the man about to become the new Emperor, the most powerful man in all of Fanes. Jai stood to his full height, a hunchbacked cripple no longer. In fact, he felt no pain at all, his festering injuries granting him a respite. At the penultimate moment, when Fang's blade reached its apex, and inevitably must come slicing down toward his brother's heart, Jai raised his voice and spoke.
"Soldiers!"
he shouted, his voice thunderous, echoing through the canyons. He could feel the raw, unnatural power in each syllable, and all heads turned his way. Fang's blade hung in midair, his eyes flicking to where Jai stood, narrowing in anger at the one who would interrupt his moment of glory.
"Your generals have clouded your minds, forcing you to obey them by the threat of the whip,"
Jai continued. He was aware of several men, guards from the palace, rushing his way to put an end to his outburst, but he ignored them.
"But you are theirs no longer. No."
He shook his head, not reacting as one of the guards reached him, tried to grab him. He trusted Shanti, and she did not fail him, performing a maneuver graceful enough to be part of a dance, her leg lifting high, swooping over the guard's head, and then crashing down on his spine. He collapsed in a heap. Jai could sense the minds of each and every slave soldier, more than 10,000 strong, waiting for him to speak the words, already anticipating it. His words were justice. Perhaps not the kind he wanted the most, but that could come later. He had to believe that.
"Now," he said, "you are mine."
On the final word there was a thunderclap, though the sky was clear. The earth shook, and rocks tumbled from the canyon walls. Several large stones crashed into the helms of the generals, knocking them senseless, perhaps even killing them. The soldiers raised their fists to their chest. In one voice they boomed,
"What is your command?"
Jai said,
"Save the Emperor."
Falcon Hoser. Falcon's eyes fluttered open when he heard the voice. Something was happening, though it was difficult to determine what. All he knew was that, inexplicably, he wasn't dead, at least not yet. Above him, that sparkling scythe hung, like the green moon god in early spring. Not falling, but threatening. His brother's attention was drawn elsewhere, most likely to the powerful voice echoing through the canyons. Frantically, Fang's eyes shot downward, meeting Falcon's in a shattered instant. He saw the uncertainty, the remorse, the fear, and then the decision.
"I don't want to die," Falcon thought,
pushing any energy he had left against the paralyzing poison flowing through his bloodstream.
"Ah!"
he yelled, rolling halfway to the side, just far enough for the blade whooshing down to scrape against his flesh but not impale him. He heard it thunk into the ground as all strength left him. Darkness swarmed over him. 101. The Southern Empire, Fanes. Jai Jiru. 1 week later. Jai could still remember how it had felt as the soldiers had swarmed Fang Hoser, taking him apart bit by bit. Next, on Jai's command, they had taken the guards and the generals. He had spared the lives of the wealthy spectators, though he had captured them. It had felt powerful. Though he knew justice was being served, his justice mark proved that. Something about it had felt wrong. Maybe it was that he was controlling the slaves with naught but his voice, convincing them he was their commander. Or maybe it was that he was rounding up people he didn't even know, stealing their freedom, chaining them together and marching them back to the palace. From there, things had only gotten messier. The army had taken Fenir with ease, though one general had remained back at the palace with a contingent of guards and soldiers. When they'd seen the thousands of soldiers marching on them, they'd tried to flee. Jai had the soldiers catch each and every one of them before they could spread the word about what had happened. The wealthy slave owners were next. Few of them fought back, and those that did were subdued and chained, using the metal links of their own slaves, who were released. The last week had been chaos. There were released slaves living in the dwellings of those they used to serve. The prisons were overflowing with the previously wealthy, whom Jai now had to worry about feeding and caring for. And, despite their efforts, someone had escaped to spread the news around Fanes. Stories of mine masters being overrun by their slaves were coming in each day. Some of those very slaves, well, not slaves anymore, had begun wandering into Fenir looking for shelter and food. There were rumours that the war cities along the Southron gates were already raising their armies and preparing to march on Fenir. However, of all the challenges, the one that troubled Jai the most was that he hadn't been able to find his mother anywhere in the palace. He was beginning to wonder whether he'd imagined her. Jai hadn't gotten a lot of sleep, and there wasn't much more on the horizon. Despite all of that, he knew he'd make the same choices again in a heartbeat. Watching Shanti approach, her muscular stride commanding the attention of all she passed, Jai couldn't hold back a smile. "More good news?" he said sardonically. He was standing just outside of the room he'd been bedding down in, one of the generals, deciding whether to try to take a nap. She touched him lightly on the chest, rose onto her toes, and kissed him deeply, stealing his breath. Any thoughts of a nap flew out of his mind. She pulled back, laughing.
"A kiss seems like such an easy thing now," she said.
"True," he agreed, curling a hand behind her back. "We should do it more often."
"Gladly."
Her lips brushed his cheek before finding his once more, parting to allow their tongues to meet. He tugged on her shirt, drawing her toward his door. Still kissing her, he fumbled to get it open. When it finally burst free, he was barely able to kick it closed before she'd shoved him onto the bed, her hands burning their way under his shirt, drawing it over his head. This he needed, not only because his feelings for her were lightning and thunder bottled, but because it was a reprieve from the challenges of fighting a civil war against his own people while trying to rebuild an empire from the bottom up. As her lips kissed a path from his abdomen to his neck, he worked on her shirt, eventually figuring out the complex ties to unravel it over her head. Her lips found his once more, and any thoughts of war or rebellion or justice disappeared into Shanti. Shanti lay against him, skin on skin, so warm, so full of life. His heart beat with hers, their breaths naturally falling into sync. Her face was perfection in sleep, smooth red stone carved into a statue of a goddess. Her black tears shone in the waning afternoon light. He spotted one that was slightly darker than the others. "It's new," he thought, "for her mother." The thought made him sad. It also made him long even more for his own mother. Perhaps he'd only thought he'd seen her. He almost laughed at his own foolishness. He hadn't even seen the woman's face, only assumed it was his mother based on the beauty of her dance of Fen Sir. The last time he'd seen his mother dance was as a boy. In fact, it was probably the imagination of a child that had built his mother's artistry to such a high level. "No," he thought, chiding himself. "It was her. I could feel it in my bones, and I will find her." Sonika Vade and her black tears arrived the very next day, all smiles and congratulations on the monumental victory the rebellion had won. "You will be emperor," the dark-haired Phoenician said. Not a question or a suggestion, a statement. Though several others had suggested the same thing, Shanti included, Jai had waved off the idea as nonsense. In his mind, Fanes could become anything they wanted now. It didn't have to remain an empire. "We have plenty to worry about first," he said neutrally, not wanting to ruin the moment with an argument. "I'm just glad you and the Tears are alive." "We didn't lose a single warrior when we returned to Garadia," Sonika said proudly. A thrill shot through Jai. Garadia. In all the chaos, he'd forgotten about his original home, the one mine he'd wanted to liberate more than any other. "Where are they? Where are my people?" "Surprise," Sonika said, smiling. Around the corner, they came in droves, led by Jig and Viola and their mother, Morella. Jig practically tackled him, while Viola, who was fast becoming a woman, offered a shy smile and a kiss on the cheek. Morella's hug was warm and thankful, and Jai's eyes overflowed. More and more came, old friends and new ones, the people he'd lived and breathed with for 5 long years, the people he'd mourned with, the people he'd once failed. When the reunion was finished and Shanti left to guide them to where they'd be able to shelter in the short term, Jai turned to Sonika. "Thank you. You have done well." "As have you," she said,
And it seems you've done well with Shanti, too.
Jai blushed. How could you tell?
A woman knows, she said. And I know Shanti better than most. She is happy, despite the news of her mother.
Jai nodded.
She is the strongest woman I have ever met, save for you, perhaps.
Sonika laughed at that, but didn't contradict him.
She knew her strengths. What news from the other mines?
First, I want to hear about Garadia. Where are the mine masters? Where is Axa? Have they been taken to prison yet?
Jai wanted to see the man he'd once despised, who had grudgingly become his friend and co-conspirator.
Sonika frowned.
The tears are efficient, she said. Don't you remember? We leave none living who are not deserving.
Oh, gods.
Jai closed his eyes. He should have known. In truth, he'd not even considered the fact that Axa would be caught in the path as the landslide of rebellion rumbled over the Empire.
Jai opened his eyes.
Did we do something wrong?
Sonika said, still frowning.
No, Jai said. It's just hard when so many have to die for change to occur. I wish it wasn't so.
Goodbye, Axa, he thought, and thank you for everything.
You have more than redeemed yourself in the eyes of the gods.
Of that I am certain.
Jai hoped that whatever came next, that no more of the people he loved would be caught in the crossfire.
I want to show you something, he said.
The army continued to live in the canyon they'd grown up in. Several times Jai had tried to persuade them to relocate, but not using the power of his justice mark. He didn't want to force them when he could help it. That being said, he knew they would have to fight again, and he would have to command them. As soon as the Empire was won, however, he would release them from this duty to do as they wished.
There are so many,
Sonika said, her voice filled with awe.
How did Hoza keep them hidden for so long?
Jai shrugged.
The canyons are a maze, and no one ever had any reason to venture this far inside them. Too dangerous.
And they will fight for you.
Jai didn't like the way that sounded, but it hit closer to the truth than any other wording.
Yes.
Sonika nodded.
Then we will win. We killed the Hosers, and next we shall take all of Fane's.
Jai bit his lip.
Shanti, apparently, hadn't told her old friend everything that had transpired.
We killed all the Hosers but one.
What?
Her eyes were as sharp as twin daggers.
I thought you knew.
Falcon Hoza survived.
Fang poisoned him with jade hemlock, but wasn't able to finish the job before the soldiers swarmed over him.
Interesting, Sonika said, a light entering her gaze, one he'd seen before.
A public execution would be an effective way to solidify our victory. We can make an example of him.
Jai cringed.
We're not going to kill him.
Why not?
Because, for now, he's still the Emperor, and we need him to convince the Phoenicians to change.
102. The Southern Empire, Fane's. Falcon Hoza. Feeling was slowly beginning to come back to his extremities, though he could do little more than wiggle his fingers and toes. Typically, the effect of the poison didn't last this long, but Fang hadn't taken any risks, using an especially potent form of the liquid.
Fang, Falcon thought. Fox.
I am all that's left of my family, save for Raven and Whisper.
He vowed to send a stream to Calypso as soon as he was well enough, telling them everything and begging for an end to the civil war. Assuming Jai Giroux and the other rebels allowed it. Assuming they didn't still plan to kill him. He startled when he realized there was a dark form on the edge of his vision, watching him.
Hello?
He said.
Emperor,
Shanti said.
Are you comfortable?
He breathed a sigh of relief. He'd expected it to be an assassin. He deserved as much.
I can't feel much, so I don't rightly know. I'd rather be on the floor.
When he'd first emerged from unconsciousness, still paralyzed, he'd found himself on his father's bed. He still didn't think of it as his own, where he'd remained since. 3 times a day someone would enter his room and spoon a liquid meal down his throat and change the wrappings about his loins. The latter was embarrassing each time. This, however, was the first he'd seen of Shanti, and he felt a slight flutter in his chest at her presence. "Do you want to know what's happening in your empire?" she asked. He tried to shake his head, but even that wouldn't work.
"No," he said, "and it's not my empire. Not anymore. It never really was. It's the people's empire."
"Which is exactly why you should be the emperor. At least for a while longer." He laughed, his fingers twitching erratically.
"I'm certain the freed slaves will disagree, as will the rebels."
"Jaijaru agrees, at least in principle."
"He bears a tattoo, does he not?"
The last week had given Falcon time to piece his memories together, eventually determining that it was Jai's voice that had commanded the slave army to save him. Shanti shifted, standing, moving to the front of his father's bed, where he could see her better.
"He does. The Justice Mark, he calls it. He showed it to me the other day. It's on his heel. The Scales of Justice."
Falcon pursed his lips. This was the kind of man the Empire needed. A good leader, a strong leader, capable and honorable, and unjaded by living a false life. Then again, Falcon remembered, Jaijaru had pretended to be a loyal mine master to his father.
"Perhaps we aren't as different as I think. You and Jai are..."
"Yes," she said, understanding. "We are."
"He is fortunate, indeed."
"Thank you for saying that. Would you like me to read you a book?"
The offer was perhaps the kindest thing anyone had ever done for Falcon.
"Please. So long as it isn't the last book. Too tragic, even for me."
She laughed.
"Fair enough. I have a whole stack for you, though you don't have to hide them in your bedroll any longer."
Something about that truth, more than anything else, made Falcon's heart swell with excitement. It was a bold, brave new world, and he had the chance to be a part of it. Shanti settled in at the foot of the bed, cracked a book, and started to read. 103. The Eastern Kingdom, approaching Faria from the sea. Raven Sands. Goggin and his guanero had been placed on ships and sent well ahead of the Dragonia, allowing a week for them to sail northward, curling a path out of sight from land before turning sharply toward Ironwood and Faria. It was a tactic used once before, long before Raven had been born. "It will work again," she thought now, watching the water for any sign of the ships. The land was somewhere to the west, but out of sight for the moment. She felt Roan Loren's arms around her waist, his grip lessening with each mile that passed as he grew more accustomed to flight. To either side, the Dragonia flanked her, flying in perfect formation, their leather armor strapped around their scales, adding a second layer of protection to their vital areas. Roan hadn't spoken in a while, having given up his endless attempts to change her mind. She suspected he'd fallen asleep, but then he said, "There," pointing past her, toward the ocean's white-capped surface. She saw it. The first of the ships, its sails full as it churned westward. The other vessels came into view, each bearing the Calypsian sigil. 7 seaworthy dragons to add to the 12 in the sky. Roan said, "It's not too late. You've said your piece. Now, please, be silent or I shall dump you in the sea." "Dump away. My voice is all I have to give." "You cannot stop a dragon once it spies its prey," she said. "No, I can't. But you can. It is you who sits on the dragon throne. It is you who can change the way your people think." She had to hand it to him. He was as persistent as a starved hound begging for scraps at its master's table. "Can a dragon change their nature? Can a snake subsist on fruit and straw?" "You are human," Roan said. "I am. And we are worse than both dragons and snakes. The sins of the past don't justify those of the future. You've been spending too much time with my Aunt Windy." Still, something about what he was saying broke through her stubbornness. Was this really what she wanted? Yes, she had to avenge the deaths of her warriors, of the innocents at Kesh, but how many more would die in a direct attack on a city built... assuming Roan was correct, to defend against dragons and Guanic. For the first time since they'd departed Calypso, she felt unsure of herself.
"I can't lose you, too,"
Whisper's words from the last time they'd spoken. Twice Raven had tried to speak to her sister again, but she wouldn't see her, not even to say goodbye. It had left a pit in Raven's chest, but she'd filled it in with anger and bloodlust. Roan said, "Turn them around. Give the order for the ships to return to Calypso. The Dragonia will follow. Prepare your defenses at home. If the Easterners attack, then fight." The thought of such a decision took her breath away. She could picture the joy on Whisper's face, the bridge it would create between them. Her soldiers would be angry for a time, yes, but they would have no choice but to move on. She was the Empress. "Impossible," she said. "It's impossible." "It's not," Roan said. "I promise you." His words seemed to break through the cloud cover, rays of sunlight bathing her face in warmth. A sign. "Oh, gods, what am I doing?" An excited thrill churned through her as she contemplated what she was about to do. That, more than anything else, convinced her it was the right decision.
"Ryder! Shanalyn!" she shouted,
raising her voice to be heard over the beating of wings, the rush of wind. Her dragon masters angled their heads in her direction, awaiting her command.
"Call off the attack," she said.
Ryder's eyes widened. Shanalyn's narrowed.
"I misheard my Empress," Shanalyn said. "You did not. This ends now. We're returning to Calypso. Spread the word. Tell the ship captains to reverse their course."
Ryder said,
"It shall be done,"
her eagerness obvious as she broke formation. Shanalyn, on the other hand, said,
"No."
"What?"
Though the Dragonmaster had, at times, been difficult, insolent even, he'd never so directly challenged her command.
"You foolish girl," he growled. "You think because you sit on the dragon throne that you control the Dragonia?"
He shook his head, grasping the reins tighter.
"Even Ryder is blind to the power I've been building over the years. Save for Ciri and Haeron, the dragons will answer to me and me alone."
"Oh, gods.
Ryder was right. I've been a fool. I am the blind one."
With a barked command, Cronus dove after Ryder and Haeron. To Raven's shock, the rest of the Dragonia followed in perfect attack formation. She shouted the command for halt, but her order was ignored. Raven didn't have time to think, to consider the magnitude of Shanalyn's treason. She only had time to act.
"Dive!"
she roared. Though Ciri was already angling herself lower, her wings cutting through the air like twin knives. Dead ahead, the Dragonia were closing in on Ryder and Haeron, who were oblivious to the danger. Instead, Ryder was standing, motioning to the ships, giving them the signal to reverse course and head for home. And then, to Raven's horror, Cronus was upon the Dragonmaster, his clawed feet ripping her from the saddle, tossing her into the air. Haeron, having felt the impact, wheeled around, releasing a powerful roar laced with shimmering flames. The enormous dragon tried to plunge downward, but Cronus blocked his path, his giant maw open to reveal teeth as black as charred wood. Haeron, now riderless, launched himself at Cronus, biting at his neck. Cronus dodged, releasing a shriek, clamping his teeth on Haeron's foot. Haeron kicked with his other powerful claw, landing a blow on Cronus's head, knocking him loose. That was all Raven saw, for Ciri had now streaked past the dragon brawl, plummeting for the ocean in a free fall. Ryder's small form twisted and spun, battered by the wind. Ciri closed in, grunting in determination. Though Raven was her rider, she'd always had a certain affection for Ryder, who never failed to give her special attention when Raven wasn't around to do so herself. The ocean, however, grew ever closer. A fall from this height, Raven knew, would be the equivalent of dashing one's body against a slab of stone.
"Go!"
she screamed, though Ciri was doing just that. She could feel Roan clutching her from behind, but barely registered the additional pressure, her entire focus on her friend. Just before the moment of impact, the dragon swooped beneath Ryder, a red blur, catching the Dragonmaster softly on her leather wing.
Ryder!
Raven shouted. But her friend lay still, unmoving. Blood leaked from a wound somewhere near her abdomen.
Ciri, roll her to me.
She knew it might be dangerous to move the Dragonmaster's body, but there was no other choice. Ciri understood, angling her wing so that the Dragonmaster slid along its broad expanse. Raven caught her with both hands, tipping her head back to look at her face, which appeared so peaceful she might have been sleeping, her eyes closed. A trickle of blood oozed from one corner of her mouth. Raven was unaware of whatever was happening above her, arrow focused on the Dragonmaster, her friend.
I can help her, Roan said.
How?
I can heal her.
You are trained?
Something like that.
Ryder, can you hear me?
Raven asked. The woman's eyelids fluttered open, her gaze wild and unfocused for a moment before landing on Raven.
Empress?
She said.
Are you in pain?
A sly smile.
Pain? No, I was dreaming. I dreamt I was flying like Heron, the two of us side by side. I was a dragon, too.
A sudden look of horror crossed her face.
No!
She screamed, her eyes painting a path past Raven, toward the sky. Raven looked up to find Heron locked in battle with not only Cronus, but the rest of the Dragonia, which had the black dragon surrounded, snapping from all sides. The largest dragon in the brood was already bleeding from a dozen places.
Heron?
Ryder said.
Heron!
The confusion was evident in her tone. She didn't have any recollection of what had transpired. Raven had an impossible choice. If she ordered Ciri to help Heron, she would likely be killed too. But if she didn't...
Fly, my beauty, fly! Raven!
Roan shouted. But his voice was sucked away by the wind as Ciri shot upward, gusts buffeting her sides, a trickle of flame licking the corners of her mouth. Ciri hit the first dragon she encountered from the side, biting and scratching, tearing off chunks of leather armor and scales, spewing flames at the rider. Neither the dragon nor its rider stood a chance, blood spraying in all directions as they fell toward their watery grave. Raven had not been idle, managing to unhook a whip from the saddle as they spun and twisted, finding a target, snapping the long weapon. She caught the rider around the neck, yanking back, watching with satisfaction as the treasonous bastard was ripped from his saddle, slamming against Ciri's scales, bouncing off, and falling away with a scream. Amidst the melee, Heron continued to fight for his life, roaring, slapping his spiked tail at anything and everything. One dragon took a long spike to the face, and it broke off in its eye. It screamed, but the ear-shattering sound was cut off when Heron crunched its enormous jaws on the dragon's neck. Flames shot from the dozen or so puncture wounds. The dragon tried to flap its wings to stay aloft, but some connection between brain and limbs had been severed, and it only served to spin in a wild circle before dropping from the sky. Watching the dragons Raven had once loved destroy each other twisted something inside her chest. And yet the worst was still to come. Ryder rasped,
"Please, help him!"
She was dying, and her entire focus was on her dragon, her friend, her blood ally. Raven remembered what Roan had said earlier about being able to heal. She twisted her head to look at him.
"Save her,"
she said. He nodded, eyes wide. Just as she started to turn back around, a light caught her eye through his shirt. She shook it off and refocused. Ciri's path was barred by three dragons. Beyond them, Cronus took Heron from behind, while the large dragon was distracted by other foes. Cronus's claws slid around Heron's long neck, clamping tight. He was beginning to tear into him. Raven had to look away. The sound that burst from Ryder's mouth sent shivers down her spine. It was a cry of one's soul being ripped away, shredded into a thousand pieces. Raven understood. She couldn't imagine losing Ciri. But the sound still made her cringe. Broken, bleeding, Heron fell from the sky. Time seemed to stop, the dragon's eyes finding its masters as it dropped, locking on Ryder in a final shared connection. And then the sea swallowed him. The mighty dragon was lost.
Oh, gods,
Roan breathed from behind.
Raven had no choice but to flee.